Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. We've been focusing on healthcare throughout the world during our 10 o'clock programs for the past few weeks. And today we'll be looking at the Caribbean. Obviously, many countries and different kinds of healthcare, but I think that the mission of many of the countries in the Caribbean, from Haiti to Barbados to Grenada to Cuba to the Virgin Islands, are similar, that many of them have a combination of private-public systems. In most of the countries, there is a great effort to ensure all of the people. And this hour, we'll be looking at the challenges that the Caribbean faces and the kind of healthcare we find in various countries. Our guest is Dr. Henry Frazier. Dr. Frazier is a professor of medicine and clinical pharmacology and the dean of the School of Clinical Medicine and Research in Barbados. He's director of the Chronic Disease Research Center, School of Clinical Medicine and Research, and a consulting physician at Queen Elizabeth Hospital. He is an intermittent short-term consultant for the Pan American Health Organization and for the World Health Organization. He has done a great deal of work in the study of health of the elderly, the study of amputations in diabetes. He has worked with centenarians in Barbados, adolescent health and fitness programs, and has written a number of book chapters and articles in many journals, academic journals, health journals, on a number of health-related topics. So he has a good sense of what's going on in many countries in the Caribbean. And in some ways, many people in many of the countries think of themselves as a region, and so there are regional healthcare conferences that take place in which they learn from each other about what works and what doesn't work. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Frazier. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Dr. Henry Frazier, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello. Thank you very much for asking me. It's a real pleasure.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on the air. Tell me, does the Caribbean think of itself as a region when it comes to healthcare, so that you're trying to share resources and hospitals, or is each country unto itself?
Well, we're very much a sub-region in the Pan American Health Organization concept, and we tend to share quite a lot between the English-speaking Caribbean countries. You see, with the old story of colonization of the Caribbean, there were the English islands, there were the Dutch islands, the Spanish islands, and the French islands. So those of us who speak English, we tend to be very monolingual, and we share a lot. And there's a regional entity called CARICOM for the Caribbean Community, and that kind of oversees many of the health interests. But having said that, while we communicate a lot, we do so more or less intimately through the University of the West Indies, but the healthcare systems in the actual countries tend to be rather discreet.
I see.
In other words, the teaching programs, the qualifications of our doctors who move between Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, and so on, all of our doctors come out of the University of the West Indies faculties of medical science, so they all have the same degree. But the healthcare system itself, run by each government, tends to be fairly disparate, and each has its own unique features. And you know, I really don't want to sound boastful, but I do think that Barbados is the model.
Why do you say that?
Why do I say that? Because we have emphasized healthcare in Barbados as being absolutely fundamental to development. And therefore, Barbados, being a smaller country with a little under 300,000 people and good communication systems and so on, we've been able to focus on education and health as the linchpins of development. And our healthcare system is therefore comprehensive, with a series of what we call polyclinics across the island and one large central hospital. And these clinics and this hospital provide every element of healthcare absolutely free to everyone in the country.
It's all free. Universal healthcare coverage that is free.
We have universal health care,
but
with an option for private care, so that someone can see a private practitioner and pay a fee to that private practitioner, but he will still get his drugs covered by the government through what we call a drug benefit service. So he has the best of both worlds, where he can choose his doctor and therefore pay a fee, but he can get his drug treatment for almost free.
Why do you have this system?
Well, I think we've always recognized that healthcare was important. And in the old days before independence in the 1950s, there wasn't any such system except for the very poor. We had a doctor in every parish who would provide free service to the indigent, to those who couldn't afford a fee. But it was not a comprehensive service. And as part of our independence process, successive governments have understood how important health is. And they have literally won elections or lost elections on the strength of how good the healthcare system was. And so each government, in a sense, has attempted to improve and outdo the previous administration by improving the healthcare system. And when it was appreciated that we shouldn't go the British route of having a 95% national health service, but we should allow the option of choice and fee paying, we simply strengthened the availability of the public service. And so that I think the estimate is that about two-thirds to 70% of our healthcare encounters are entirely through the free public system, whether it's a hospital admission or whether it's a clinic consultation.
Is it very expensive, Dr. Fraser?
Well, I think that we somehow managed to pare things down to the bone, and it costs the government a fair amount to provide the system. But fees for the private care, when we compare them with North American equivalent, they tend to be very much lower. I would say that most of the fees here for medical services in the private sector are probably half what they are in North America. A CAT scan is very much less than half.
Really?
Provided by a private institution, a private service. Drug costs are less because, as you probably know, drug costs in America are hugely inflated. We have an international tender system so that countries that manufacture drugs in Canada, USA, Britain, Belgium, Switzerland, all compete for an international tender, and we get much lower prices for our drugs than patients would pay in North America.
Mm-hmm. And why would a CAT scan be half the cost?
I don't know. I think people realize that they are operating in a different market. They recognize that healthcare should not cause people to go bankrupt. And therefore, the profit margins are almost certainly smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Less people have insurance because the vast majority, as I said, can get their care free. And even those who pay fees will get their drugs free. So health insurance is not as big a deal as it is in North America. It tends to be only the large companies which provide private health insurance for their employees. And they pay, normally, most of the insurance companies only provide 80% of the cover. So there's definitely a lot of thought going into keeping prices down.
And you talk about Barbados being the best among the Caribbean nations. Are there systems that are wildly different than your system that may be, you know, your insurance is related to your job, similar to the United States, and troubled by the same things that are troubling the United States, or do you not even find that model among the Caribbean nations?
Well, none of the Caribbean countries that were former British colonies, now independent, none of them have that American-style emphasis on mm-hmm. costly health insurance. Insurance in all of our English-speaking former British colonies is a privilege of the minority who tend to work for large companies. I don't know much about the systems of Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands, which I would assume probably are modeled on the USA.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the disparities are quite considerable, because you have a country like Jamaica with 3 million people, 10 times our population, and its area is much larger. And providing a comprehensive health cover across the country and in the mountains and the more distant towns and so on is indeed very difficult. And so Jamaica has a huge challenge meeting the healthcare demands of its people because their economy is bad and the country is much larger and the population is much larger. So they have a very different kind of system, and they haven't got the level of care, either the comprehensive distribution of doctors and public clinics, nor the extensive provision of healthcare that we can provide here in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the smaller islands suffer from a problem of distribution of health personnel. It's rather like USA and Canada, where the country areas are underserved,
right,
because nobody wants to work miles from anywhere, and very few doctors today have the clinical skills that will allow them to work in the outback and drive miles to see a patient in their own home,
right,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
That has disappeared. So in some of our small Caribbean countries, the economy of scale means that we may be underserved in terms of the doctors. But that is something that we try in the University of the West Indies system to specifically cater for, so that we try to ensure that our doctors are very good at clinical diagnosis and do not have to reply on the CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
We have less litigation than the USA. And so that is one of the factors that provides the biggest difference between Caribbean and American medicine. The huge amount of litigation and the huge awards that are made if a doctor makes a mistake means that the American physician will go very quickly to the high-powered, costly investigations like the CAT scan and the MRI. Our doctors are trained to leave that for the next step, and to emphasize their clinical skills and their first line of investigation, and that keeps costs down.
Interesting. How do you retain your doctors? I would think that the pay scale may be a little bit different if you're looking at some European countries, or maybe even the United States, in the nursing profession and in the doctor profession. Do you have to do special things to retain all the people you train?
It's a challenge, and I can tell you quite frankly that Caribbean medicine suffers very badly because of the lure of North American medicine. And the nurses in particular are paid so much more in the USA than in the Caribbean that there are more Jamaican nurses in the USA than there are in Jamaica.
Oh my.
Far more.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamaica in particular has lost perhaps 50% of the doctors who graduate at the University of the West Indies there. Some go for further training and stay, and some simply emigrate because they like the American lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a major problem, the brain drain, a very, very major problem. And I can safely say that there are probably more than 3,000, perhaps 4,000, Caribbean people, graduates of our University of the West Indies, who are working in the USA and a few hundred in Canada, many of them at very senior positions, professors and leaders in the profession. And it's a huge brain drain. And I'll tell you quite honestly, it's one of the factors in public global life and global exchanges that, to my surprise, continues with very little benefit to the Caribbean countries which produce these doctors. I would have thought that the higher diplomatic levels would have found some quid pro quo.
Right.
So that this would not represent such a huge loss of investment by the Caribbean nations. But it's a fact of life at the moment.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. Dr. Henry Frazier is our guest, professor of medicine and clinical pharmacology and dean of the School of Clinical Medicine and Research in Barbados, University of the West. He's director of the Chronic Disease Research Center. He's a consultant physician for Queen Elizabeth Hospital. He is a short-term consultant for the Pan American Health Organization and for the World Health Organization, chair of the board of the West Indian Medical Journal, and we're welcoming phone calls. He, of course, and it's interesting, he said he thinks Barbados has the best healthcare system among all the Caribbean nations, but he has an understanding of what's going on in other countries as well. I'm interested in his take on Cuban healthcare, and we'll ask him about that. As we consider healthcare reform in this country, we're doing a series of programs on Tuesdays at 10, looking primarily at, although we haven't exclusively looked at other countries, but we've looked primarily at how other countries deliver healthcare reform. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. 8655. Lines are open for you right now. Our email address, talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for Dr. Frazier, joining us by phone today from Barbados. And we start with Douglas from Brookfield. Hello, Douglas.
Yeah, good morning. I've been trying to get on this program for a long time on this subject. I wish somebody would talk to the administration about the fact that we are the only industrial country that does not have medical, national medical insurance, and the fact that in all these other countries, nobody has to lose their home or spend their life savings just to pay their medical bills. In many cases, many of these people who are up against the wall have to split their pills and sometimes even skip them. And this is sort of a pathetic situation considering we are supposed to be the richest country in the world. I hope somebody can get this through to them and use this argument.
Okay? I do agree with you entirely.
Yeah. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Douglas. Let's go to Jean next from Green Bay. Hi, Jean.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here on the WHO website, and I see that Barbados has a much better infant mortality rate, certainly than the United States, and especially better than Green Bay, Milwaukee, Racine. And I wonder why that is. What do they do for prenatal care that's so effective in Barbados?
I think it's the provision of early diagnosis of pregnancy and early referral to the specialist obstetricians, and we've had a tremendous focus on this issue because 30 years ago, we were not nearly so good. And we have done everything just obsessionally good obstetric care. We've had some excellent obstetricians and the emphasis in the public health service so that the patients come in early and problems are picked up early. And everyone is seen in the same hospital by the same group of highly skilled obstetricians. The other thing I think is that we've emphasized breastfeeding. That's an important point. And so if we look at early mortality, we've completely transformed this over the last 30 years just by, I think, good medical care starting at the public health end, early referral, and a single hospital managing all the deliveries.
Hmm. And I know that you've really taken on HIV/AIDS. The Bahamas and Barbados been able to mount a sufficiently strong response that has slowed the epidemic. You've succeeded in reducing mother-to-child transmission dramatically, and Barbados and Bahamas provide antiretroviral treatment to almost everybody who needs it.
That's right. Yeah. We have taken that very seriously, and again, it's a good cadre of pediatricians who've working with the obstetricians. We set up a unit specifically, a reference unit for managing HIV and providing the laboratory support. So we tried to put all of the pieces together for comprehensive HIV/AIDS treatment. And if you go to the other end of the spectrum, our longevity is also quite a model.
Is it?
Yes, we have recently completed a study of centenarians.
Oh.
And we have, in fact, the highest national, authenticated, well-documented figures for the highest prevalence of centenarians in the world.
Do you really?
The Japanese province of Okinawa is well known for its longevity. And here in the Caribbean, we have a country called Dominica, not the Dominican Republic, but Dominica, a mountainous country in the Eastern Caribbean. And they claim to have the highest national figures, but many of their centenarians have only verbal confirmation as opposed to birth certificates to actually confirm this. So Dominica, Barbados, I would say, are among the top with documentation for longevity. The healthy lifestyle of the Caribbean, what can I say?
So what is that? Is it the food? Is it, what is it?
Well, I think it's the absence of either the rigors of the north. As you know, in the north, many older people every winter die of pneumonia and heat deprivation. And in the tropics, many people die of the dreadful tropical diseases. We have neither of those, but our people worked hard. So it was a combination of physical activity without the overindulgence in food that characterizes today's society.
Mm-hmm.
However, the next generation may not live as long because they are all victims of the chronic disease epidemic. Two-thirds of our people are overweight or obese. Half of them have high blood pressure, and a quarter have diabetes. And this applies very much to urban, the USA, of course.
Sure. And are you finding that among young people in Barbados as well?
That's absolutely right, yes. And I would simply say that the difference is that much of this goes with poverty. And the hope that we have is that by having comprehensive health care, we can stem the tide of the obesity epidemic, because it's the poorer people who tend to have the hypertension and diabetes.
Yeah.
Gene, and without the health care.
Thank you for your call. We go to Jerry from Toma next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, thank you. Hey, I'm a physician assistant in Toma, and I was wondering if the guest might be able to comment on how he saw physician assistants being able to affect this new health care environment that we're going to be moving into.
Well, I don't know a lot about the programs for physician assistants in the USA. I do know that it has become a cheaper way of providing health care in the UK, where the costs of the National Health Service there have been spiraling, and they have been using physician assistants to do a lot of things that the doctors used to do. In Barbados, we use nurses to do some of these things, some of the preliminary screening. And obviously, it helps in a situation of medical shortages. This raises the question of the supply of doctors, of course. It's obviously cheaper to provide physician assistance, but with the litigation that is so prevalent in North America, I wonder whether the different level of training has implications in terms of what is done and what litigation might result from it. I just don't know. I raise that question.
Did you have something else, Jerry?
No, I think that was an excellent answer. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Lines are open if you'd like to speak with Dr. Fraser. Our number, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network, and we're continuing our healthcare series on Tuesdays, looking at the Caribbean this hour. Our guest is joining us from Barbados and has said that he believes that what healthcare is found in Barbados is the best in the whole region, and has outlined why. He's a professor of medicine and clinical pharmacology and dean of the School of Clinical Medicine and Research at Barbados University of the West, and lines are open for him right now. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the Pan American Health Organization does, Dr. Fraser?
Yes, they provide consultancies and technical support in various areas. They tend to be, it's a public health organization, so they tend to be looking at health systems, organization of care, and so on. For example, we have been talking in Barbados for 5-6 years now about the redevelopment process of our hospital. And so they have assisted in a lot of the discussion about hospital redevelopment. Another area that we've worked with has been the development of guidelines for management of hypertension and diabetes. So they would pull together workshops, bringing together so-called experts in management of hypertension and diabetes in order to produce those guidelines. And there are many areas like that where they assist both in management at a country level and at a regional level, providing technical expertise, pulling together meetings, and so on.
And does this encompass all of the Caribbean or just certain nations in the Caribbean?
Well, I'm not quite sure how the Caribbean is divided, but I can only say that the English-speaking countries of the Caribbean tend to come under a sub-region.
I see.
And this is the 10 English-speaking countries, and Suriname, for some reason, is one of the Dutch countries that's involved with this particular arrangement. I'm not quite sure if they then group the Latin-speaking Caribbean countries. I'm not sure quite how that works. But we have an office in Barbados, which is called the PAHO Sub-Regional Office. And that caters to the programs in all of the English-speaking countries. And then each of our bigger countries, such as Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad and the Bahamas has a PAHO country representative so that they can deal with specific country-specific programs. And they give advice to the Ministry of Health, and they work with the university in partnership to some extent.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of healthcare in Cuba?
Well, this is a very interesting question. Cuba has spent enormous effort in two ways. One, developing a very, very strong public health system with emphasis on public health and prevention. It's also spent a great deal of effort and money on developing state-of-the-art institutes so that they have an institute for eye diseases, and they have an extensive program assisting countries across Latin America, bringing people in who need to have cataract surgery.
Hmm.
So Cuba is very famous for its public health system, and it's particularly famous for its eye institute, but it also has a pediatric institute, a research institute, an HIV, AIDS, and so on, infectious disease institute. These centers are all located in Havana. Now, Cuba has two outreach approaches to Latin America and the Caribbean, one for the cataract surgery that it provides, and the other for training medical practitioners, for training doctors. The problem with the training of doctors is that medicine is, as Sir George Alleen, the former director of PAHO and a Barbadian and one of my mentors, as Sir George Alleen has always said, medicine is a social science. It's very much a part of the society in which it is practiced and from which it is people are trained. And so a student who goes from Jamaica or Trinidad or Barbados or an English-speaking country to Cuba to study medicine has first to learn Spanish.
Yes.
To a very high level.
Mm-hmm.
He then has to practice medicine in one of many hospitals which vary very much in the quality and in the modernization, because it is well known that the hospitals in Havana and the major cities are rather more upmarket and up-to-date in terms of equipment and drugs than the peripheral hospitals. And so many of the students who come to study are in those peripheral hospitals, and their training in public health would be very much better than their training in the more modern, technically dependent subspecialties. The student then has, if he goes back to his own country, which is not Spanish-speaking, he then has to learn how to translate his medical knowledge into his own language.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to learn how to adapt what he has learned about the lifestyle and culture and the relationship between that culture and the disease from Cuba back to that of his own society. So this then, again, creates additional problems. One of the other problems that is present around the world is the question of accreditation of medical training, the question of knowing that medical training is conducted to a certain standard. And so that's one of the difficulties, that very few people outside of Cuba know very much about the Cuban medical training and the recognition of that standard. So I can only say that Cuba has emphasized its medical training. It's trained very many more doctors per population than any other country has. It has excellent preventive medicine services. But I can't say enough about the outcomes, because there's not very much published in English.
Mm-hmm.
About outcomes.
More phone calls. Dan from Menasha is next. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Doctor. I would like to comment. I've been to Barbados over a dozen times since 92.
Oh, yes.
And I, Bottom Bay is one of my favorite places.
Great. Mine too.
Really. And my observation is the diet, obviously, as you said, and when I go there, I usually go for a week to 10 days. One time I spent 2 weeks. I come back feeling so healthy. And a lot of it, you're on vacation, but I do a lot of walking, swimming, eating the flying fish. I think part of the thing, too, is the people are so, well-read, literate, so friendly, and hard workers. And that combination, they're just really, you know, and very religious. I wish I could live there. I wish my family could live there. I'm going at the end of September, and I just miss it. I haven't been there in 4 years now. But
wonderful.
It's just Oyston's, I live down there, and It's just it's so beautiful. The people are so beautiful.
Yes. Well, feel free to get in touch when you come down at the end of September. I'd like to pick up on your point about the people being religious, because I believe that spirituality has a great deal to do with people's mental health and their physical health. And in our study of centenarians, it was amazing that every one of our centenarians, with the exception of one, attributed their longevity and their good health to God.
101, and he was very religious. And
I'm sorry, we missed the beginning of that, Dan. What did you say?
My grandpa lived to 101.
Oh,
yes.
And he played organ for the church for 40 years. And so I agree. I just fell in love with the country and the people, and I miss it. It's like my second home.
Hmm. Well, thank you.
Have a wonderful trip, a return trip.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank Bye-bye. You. Matthew is next from Spring Green. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Good. Hi. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Fine.
My comments were for somebody with diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. My wife was. She was diagnosed with a 6-centimeter tumor around her hepatic artery and portal vein in December of 2007. And she was told, or we were told, you know, she had 3 months to live. And under the new type of healthcare system, my fear would have been that she would be put on a back burner because, you know, why spend the money on her if she's going to die? That kind of thing. And where we are right now is she's cancer-free. She's been cancer-free for 8 months. 9 months, I'm being told. I guess it has been 9 months. And we did a lot of it on our own. Dean Healthcare dragged their feet. And really didn't seek treatment, weren't interested in what we were doing. And we actually met a doctor named Dr. Gale at the UW. She was a fellow of Dr. LaConte, and she was from Jamaica. And she was so interested in what we had done to make my wife's tumor shrink because they'd never seen it. And that struck me because of all the first 6 doctors that we saw, only one ever asked, "What are you doing different because your results are not normal?"
Yes.
But that was one of the first things Dr. Gale and Dr. LaConte at the UW, they were like, "What are you doing different?" You know, and it was a diet change. I completely changed her diet, which we had to do again. Well, but my question was about the healthcare. How are they going to mediate, you know, who gets what treatment when? I mean, where do the priorities fall? Does somebody like my wife who's, you know, they've said, "You're going to die in 3 months," and she obviously didn't. I mean, I understand most people do. You know, with pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does that fall? I mean, how do they mediate that? Or how do they propose to mediate it?
Okay. It's a good question. I'm glad your wife is doing well. How do you deal with that in Barbados?
Well, everyone is eligible for the best treatments that are available in Barbados. The issue that you raised in relation to cancer, of course, means that sometimes when cancer drugs are very, very expensive, that is the exception to the general rule, because hugely expensive cancer drugs may not be available at a particular time. And so that is one of the rare cases with the treatment of cancer where there might be a new drug at huge cost, which we can't afford. Mm. We do have what we call a medical aid scheme, so that if someone turns up, for example, with a very rare type of tumor, or where the treatment of a specific tumor, which is very difficult to deal with, requires expertise that we don't have in Barbados, then there's a fund of several million dollars by which such a person can be sent to the Mayo Clinic or to Hopkins or to Canada. You see? So we do have a problem. We're not 100% perfect. And cancer treatment with some of the very high-cost drugs can present that problem. But every one of our patients is eligible for cancer treatment using the more standard armamentarium of drugs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Matthew, for your call. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're continuing our healthcare series and looking at other countries, special focus on the Caribbean and particularly Barbados, because our guest is from Barbados this hour. He is Dr. Henry Frazier. He is a professor of medicine and clinical pharmacology and dean of the School of Clinical Medicine and Research at the University of the West Indies. University's Cave Hill campus in Barbados and is director of the Chronic Disease Center School of Clinical Medicine and Research at the University of West Indies, and has special interest in what he said was interesting. I never knew there were that many centenarians in Barbados, but indeed there are. And he's done a study on that. He has a special interest in diabetes, health of the elderly, adolescent health and fitness, etc. A one line is open, so join us if you'd like. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well, and that is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Our next call is from Madison. How do you pronounce your name? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, how do you pronounce your name?
Carolina.
Oh, Carolina.
Yes.
Okay. Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, I can squeeze down my question to this. What would be the incentive for anyone to join a private plan if there's an adequate government plan? And I suppose they would have to pay for it in full. And does it mean that they then get a tax exemption from participating in the other? Why would a private insurance be needed in Barbados?
Well, private insurance in Barbados is provided for that extra, simply to provide that choice. As I said, everyone in Barbados is eligible for use of the public services. Those people who are employed pay a national insurance component of their salary, just as they pay an income tax. But for those people who prefer not to use the public system, maybe they don't have to wait as long, or in particular, they can choose the doctor of their choice rather than the doctor in the public clinic, then they feel advantaged and they feel happy to have the option of a private insurance scheme. So this is used by large companies as a bonus, as a perk. But of course, I mentioned earlier, and a few minutes ago, the rare occasion when someone might have a condition where it might be better to have overseas treatment if we don't have a specialist on site in that particular area, or the specialist is on vacation and there's an emergency, then someone may opt on the basis of his private insurance to travel to Florida or New York for treatment. And in that setting, our insurance schemes perhaps are not as expensive as yours in the USA, because the insurance scheme rarely covers 100% of the costs. Also, someone may opt to go overseas even if the surgery is available here. And in that case, then the insurance covers less of that cost if he elects that option. So the private insurance scheme is not nearly as big as it is in the USA. Most people don't see the need for it, but some companies provide it as a privilege to provide
and
options.
Why would somebody opt for that surgery somewhere else?
Well, I don't know what part of the USA you're actually from, but you may have a similar concept that things are bound to be better at the Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins than they might be in Brownstone. It's the concept that things are better in the metropolis. Sometimes they are, of course. The Mayo Clinic is a center of excellence famous throughout the world. So if someone feels that they're going to be better off at the Mayo Clinic than they would be with surgery in Kingston or Bridgetown, and then they may make the choice based on that.
What do you think? Is that true?
I think sometimes it's true, but most of the time it's not.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there are areas where in Barbados or in Port of Spain or in Kingston, there's a choice of several excellent surgeons for a particular condition. You may have surgeons in the USA who are doing only one type of surgery every day of the week, and they may therefore have greater expertise because they do it so often. You see the point?
Sure.
But it's not necessarily the case that the surgery will be better. We often see patients who are blinded by the fact that the doctor, the primary care doctor, for example, in a city like New York, is not necessarily as well trained as the primary care doctor in Kingston, Jamaica.
Hmm.
but there's often an assumption that things, as we say in Barbados, over and away, must be better. Mm-hmm. It's part of our colonial heritage, you know, and I think it's a perception that is sometimes right, but quite often quite unjustified.
Yes, I understand. Thank you very much for the call. We go to Merv next from Fish Creek. Hello, Merv.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thank you for bringing Dr. Fraser to the audience this morning. Dr. Fraser, I listened with interest a few minutes back as you spoke about your concern for the current generation of your children in Barbados. And my question for you, it's a curious one. I've never been to Barbados. Based on whatever everything I've heard, I plan to go.
Yeah, but, I know. I'm ready to go, too.
Yeah, I've been to Jamaica and Barbados sounds wonderful. Back to the kids. I'm wondering, what is the proliferation of the big four fast food giants of the world, how much they have proliferated Barbados? And then along with that, what about the commercial TV that does all of the advertising to drive the generation to get all that fat and bad stuff into their diets? And one last thing, speaking about TV and those related kinds of things, what is the proliferation of something like MTV and these handheld computer games that are causing our kids to sit around on their butts half of the day instead of being out active? I understand that's a pretty long, drawn-out thing, but I hope you can see the thread that goes through the question.
It's a wonderful question, and I'm really glad you asked it. We in Barbados have been rather fortunate in resisting the proliferation of the fast food giants. Way back in the 60s, Kentucky Fried Chicken appeared in Barbados in the late 60s. And Kentucky Fried Chicken and Colonel Sanders was, for 30, 40 years, the only fast food giant in Barbados. And I'll tell you that McDonald's came in, but nobody liked their hamburgers.
Oh, my gosh. You're
and
kidding.
They left again. There was much resistance. So we have developed in Barbados a fast food chain which has something like 14 restaurants across the island, and that chain serves wonderful healthy salads and vegetable burgers and so on because it's very cognizant of the importance of healthy food. It serves the bad stuff as well as the good stuff, of course, because people still like the bad stuff. And until 2 years ago, when TGI Fridays also appeared on the scene, that only Kentucky Fried Chicken was the only giant that we had here, plus our own local fast food chain called Chef Ed. We have been resisting, and right now there's another one, which I won't name, which is trying to get into Barbados, and many, many people are opposing it because we would like to see our food as healthy as possible, and we would like, when our visitors come, that they don't come to eat the same fast food that they would get in Wisconsin or New York. We'd like them to sample our breadfruit and our other fruits and vegetables and the local dishes rather than the hamburgers. So that's the answer there. We have kept the fast food chains out to some extent, but we haven't affected the social trend of eating more and more fast food. We know that's a problem, and the TV supports that. And our response to that, caller, is to form a National Commission for Chronic Diseases. And I'm the vice chairman of that commission. It's supported by the government. It's an agency of the Ministry of Health. It has multiple representation on it, and it works in many ways. We have prepared a strategic plan. We are focusing on physical activity. We are producing documents and guidelines, and we have coming up in September a wellness day. So we are trying to cope with this epidemic of fast food and obesity with our National Commission for Chronic Noncommunicable Diseases, and we're focusing on physical activity and healthy eating.
Hmm. Well, let me tell you this. If you ever want to leave the medical profession, all you have to do is start a travel business and get people to come to your island, because you'll have them there within 10 minutes. You really will. Yes. I'm ready to go.
I'll tell you something we did recently. We created a boardwalk, a two-mile strip along one of our beaches, so that people do not have to circumnavigate the rocks and the surf and the sea in order to walk along the beach. Hmm. This is a beach right outside of many of our hotels and restaurants and a suburban area just outside of Bridgetown, where walking was very difficult because of the little headlands and the rocks and the sea splashing up. So this wonderful boardwalk that's 6 feet wide stretches for 2 miles from one beach to the other. And now you have hundreds of people out there every day walking along the seaside who never walked before.
Ah, lovely. Let's go to Kate next. Thanks, Merv, for your call. Kate is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Kate.
Hi. This kind of goes back to a couple of questions ago. I'm just curious to know, it sounded like you were, when you were describing seeing the doctors in Barbados, is there a long wait to see the doctors? It sounded like that, and it sounded like you have to see specified doctors like we have in this country with HMOs. You have in-network doctors you have to see, or you pay higher prices?
No, I don't think so. Almost every doctor in a polyclinic will see patients on the same day. Doctors in private practice, sometimes they make appointments, sometimes they don't. They don't necessarily work every day. They may be full one day, and therefore they may give an appointment for the following day or the following week. Specialists in the hospital vary in terms of the number of specialists we have. We currently have only one neurosurgeon. So to see the neurosurgeon, if it's not an emergency, may take a little longer than to see me, the hypertension specialist. But basically, most appointments, even referring to a hospital specialist, can be made within a matter of weeks. And we have enough doctors that if there's an emergency, then there's a shortcut.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
Abraham from Mequon. Hi.
All right, have a good day.
Hi, Abraham.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you, Kathleen, for taking my call. Dr. Fraser, I've been listening, and quite surprised about the medical system being so different. Seems so obvious that it should be better everywhere. My question is, we have tried to have a child for about 6 years, and here in the United States, we had 6 miscarriages, and doctors would just wave their hands and just say, well, sorry. And the last answer we got from the doctor, well, we can't help you. You've got to pray to God. Then we went to Ukraine. It's not, you know, we just boarded a plane and went to Ukraine. We had a referral to go to a specialist in Ukraine. It cost us literally $600 to do the operation, and 9 months later, basically, we had a child.
Oh.
Found out what was wrong. So we have a child.
Congratulations.
Thank you. One thing that we've learned was that in Ukraine, whenever there is a miscarriage, there is an authority that overlooks and says, okay, Mr. Doctor, what did you do to prevent that? And here, they just say, sorry, we can't help you. We got that answer 7 times. How does it work in Barbados?
I'm sorry. I'm not quite sure that I've grasped the question. Kathleen, can you?
Yeah, I don't. And we're not going to have time for the complexity of it. He was. He and his wife were trying to have a child. They had an infertility problem, and the response they got, I don't know what health care they were accessing. We have so many different programs here.
Yes.
They were told to pray to God, you know, forget it, and then somehow they got referred to the Ukraine, where they fixed mechanically the thing that was keeping the couple from having a child.
Oh.
I don't know how to take the question other than, do you deal with infertility issues, those kinds of specialties in Barbados?
Well, actually, most of our gynecologists do deal with the problem, but we actually have an internationally accredited and recognized fertility center. It's called the Barbados Fertility Center, and it has excellent results. This is an obstetrician who was trained in Britain, and she's developed a tremendous reputation. And we are very proud of this unit, the Barbados Fertility Center.
Thank you, Abraham.
It's on the web, and anyone who is interested in it, Abraham, you could just look up the Barbados Fertility Center out of interest.
Sure, to find out more about it. Well, thank you so much for what an absolutely smart and pleasant. You are so wonderful to listen to, I must tell you. Going to radio, too, you could do that as well. You have a great voice. Thank
well,
you so
I hope
much.
I hope you'll come down and have an opportunity for longer discussions.
I hope so, too. I'm thinking about it after this hour. Thank you. Dr. Frazier, Henry Frazier, he's a professor of medicine and clinical pharmacology, School of Clinical Medicine and Research at the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill Campus. Thanks, Joe Lemon Noel, for producing the hour, and John Treader for on-air production.